Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a New Comics Wednesday episode. Yay! We're back. We're back with New Comics Wednesdays. Hopefully getting back in the swing of things, bringing you daily content once again, trying to get ramped back up, and also have plans to go back and fill in all those missing episodes. So appreciate all of you who've stuck with me. Appreciate those who will come back to listen to these new episodes, new content, focusing on mostly superhero comics, as you know, that we like to do here. But I know New Comics Wednesdays was one of our most popular episodes. It gives you all a chance to hear about some of the books that I've read before you get to your comic shop on Wednesday afternoon or later in the week. So I will say that this week, February 26th is a pretty DC heavy week. A lot of good DC titles. One thing I sort of noticed about a lot of the titles this week, they kind of had a similar theme, like great story, art, maybe not so great. Some of it downright bad, in my opinion. But I have to say that story-wise, I think DC continues to do a really good job. I know not everybody feels that way. Obviously, the news with Dan DiDio leaving, being removed, what have you, is weighing heavily on everybody's minds. I think people are sort of waiting for DC to come out and make a statement. I got to tell you guys, I don't think that's going to happen. DC doesn't really have a history of commenting on personnel moves like that. More likely that we will kind of get an idea of what happened behind the scenes by looking at things that feel like they change, right? When they appoint a new co-publisher, if they do, or just appoint somebody as a publisher or shift things around, and whoever they decide is going to be that new public face of DC and what decisions they make, that's going to be kind of telling in my mind in terms of why the decision was made. So obviously a lot of goings on at DC, a lot of goings on in the world of comics. We're getting ready to ramp up for convention season. C2E2's coming up here at the end of the week, and Emerald City Comic Con on top of that, followed by WonderCon. So I'm sure as the convention scene gets shifts into high gear, we'll kind of have a little more insight on what the future holds for the comic book industry in terms of events and whatnot. So let me go ahead and get to the books that I wanted to talk about this week. There are quite a few, as I said, all DC stuff. Still haven't gotten on board with Marvel sending me previews, but have a path now that I didn't have before, and hopefully before the end of the year, hopefully a lot sooner than that, but definitely before the end of the year, I'm hoping to get that squared away and be able to preview some Marvel comics for you as well. So let me go ahead and get to the DC stuff. I'll start with Action Comics number 1020. It's Metropolis Doom Part 4. This is tying into a lot of what's going on in the DC universe right now with the Batman Who Laughs and the Year of the Villain stuff, as well as the Justice League versus Legion of Doom sort of story that Scott Snyder was telling, and also the Leviathan stuff. Those are kind of the three big threads that are going on right now, and they're kind of all coming to a head. So we've got Action Comics number 1020. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis. Pencils in this issue are by John Romita Jr. We've got inks by Klaus Janson, colors by Brad Anderson, and letters by Dave Sharp. And anybody who's listened to this podcast for a long period of time knows I'm not a fan of John Romita Jr.'s artwork. I've talked about how it's gotten worse over time, and that trend seems to continue. This could be some of the worst art I've ever seen him do. It's blocky. It feels stiff. The proportions are completely out of whack. It's just it's just amateurish. It looks to me like it's done by somebody who doesn't understand art. And I understand this guy's a beloved figure, and a lot of people love his art. There was a time when I was never a huge fan, but there definitely was a time where I didn't mind his art so much, and it was a distinctive style and recognizable. But those days are long past him at this point, I feel. I don't know why he's chosen to go this way with his art, but I just don't like it. And to have him on Action Comics, I mean, it's no secret I haven't been a fan of what Brian Michael Bendis has been doing with Superman, and especially with Jonathan Kent and with Lois, Clark and Lois's relationship. But it's Superman, so, you know, I still pick it up, I still read it. And now, you know, at least there was good art before, but now with this issue, man, it's tough. It's hard. It was a slog to get through just because I don't like the story. And usually, even if the story's not great, you know, again, it's tying into a lot of what has been going on in Justice League and what Bendis has been doing with Leviathan. And so it was still okay, just trying to get through that. But even if I didn't necessarily like the story that was going on, at least one thing I could count on from Bendis was good scripting. Like the dialogue would be okay. So Young Justice guest stars in this issue. The dialogue, Superman doesn't sound like Superman. It's very stilted. It's very stiff. You know, it's unfortunate. This is one of the worst issues of Action Comics I've read in a while. When you add in that Romita Jr. art, and not a lot happens. It's tough. If you're not reading Action Comics, this is not the issue to pick up to be impressed or to jump on. So I'm just kind of hoping we get through this and get a different artist on the book. And I don't know. I mean, I'm ready for Bendis to move on from this. Unfortunately, not a lot of good things I can say about Action Comics 1020 this time around. So, all right. Up next, Amethyst number one. This has a story and art by Amy Reeder. Letters are by Gabriella Downey. This was a fun book. I'm obviously not the target audience for Amethyst. I never read Amethyst back in the day in the mid 80s when it came out. And I'm not a fan. It's not something that necessarily interests me. But this comes from Brian Michael Bendis's Wonder Comics imprint, and I was actually pretty impressed. I think Amy Reeder does a great job. This is one of those books that's the exception rather than the rule this week in terms of art. It's solid art by Amy Reeder. She does a great job of introducing Amethyst as a character, and there's a little bit of exposition at the beginning that's handled well. It gives you an idea of who Amethyst is as a character, and there's enough action in there and explaining along the way that if you've never read an Amethyst comic before, you can read this and you can understand what's going on and you're not lost, and it seems interesting enough. I probably won't read I'll probably pick up the second issue and check that out. And then beyond that, I probably won't hang around, just because, again, it's not just the character is just not someone who interests me. But that being said, it was an interesting book. I didn't feel like at any point the pacing was bad or the art was bad or anything. I read it. It flowed very well. And who knows? I may, you know, if the second issue is just as high quality as the first one was, I may keep reading it. And I would suggest that if you're someone who has a young girl or boy who's interested in fantasy stories, even more so than superheroes, this would be a great book for them to jump on. So it might be something I show my daughter, and if she enjoys it, it might be something I keep reading. So I do recommend it for younger readers, and like I said, the art is really spectacular. So it was a highlight this week for sure, Amethyst number one. All right, moving on next, I'm going to talk about Batman and Superman number seven. This is from writer Joshua Williamson. Art is by Nick Darrington. Colors are by Dave McCaig, and letters are by John J. Hill. This was a fun one. It's Kandor was recently destroyed. If you've been reading the Bendis Superman stuff, and this is dealing with the fallout of that, so I did like that it was tying back to some recent continuity. And Zod shows up. He has a plan for Kandor. And Batman and Superman, along with somebody who I'm not going to reveal who it is, who shows up as sort of an unlikely ally to Batman and Superman to oppose Zod, and it all flowed really well, and it was really interesting and fun, and it kind of felt like a classic World's Finest comic, which really, when you talk about Batman Superman comic, that's what we're talking about here. You know, it's the two pillars of DC teaming up to face grave threats. So pretty good story. I enjoyed it even more than I expected to. Being that it was Kandor and some Kryptonian history, I did have relatively high expectations, and those were even exceeded. I think Josh Williamson does a great job on pacing and on dialogue for both Batman and Superman, so that's a plus as well. As far as the art by Nick Darrington, Darrington's art for me, I love his cover work. I think he's an exceptional cover artist. When you talk about doing sequentials, it's a little inconsistent for me. He doesn't always, his line work isn't always the best in my mind. But I think he's improving, and it does have a little bit of a kind of a throwback or a Silver Age feel to his art. So the art is not bad by any stretch, like on some of these titles this week, but it's not my favorite art either. But I do still recommend Batman vs. Superman. If you haven't been reading it, this is part one of a new story arc, and it's a real good place to jump on. All right, next up we have Far Sector number 4, stories by N.K. Jemisin, art and color by Jamal Campbell, and letters by Darren Bennett. I've been loving the Far Sector title so far. It's been absolutely a surprise how much I've liked it. I think this this new Lantern they've introduced, Joe Mullen, is a really interesting character. She's thoughtful enough, but still a badass that you kind of just immediately fall in love with her. And the other thing I like about it is... And I don't know if this is because N.K. Jemisin isn't really familiar with a lot of the Green Lantern lore, or if she just wanted to shake things up, but she's done things with Joe that are different. They're not the standard sort of Green Lantern things in terms of the way she uses her ring, the way her ring works, and it's just fun. It's a breath of fresh air. It's something it's both recognizable because she is a Green Lantern, but also something new because she has added in a lot of these new concepts. And then when you talk about what Joe's mission is to kind of keep the peace on this metropolis of 20 billion people who have decided that the best way to keep peace is to suppress their emotions, you know, that's a kind of a science fiction trope at this point, with different movies and TV shows we've seen where this has happened, and it rarely works out when you're talking about repressing the emotions of intelligent beings and you know, beings that are meant to feel. Typically doesn't work. There's revolt, there's unrest and things like that, and it's no different, but Jemisin is painting it with a very innovative brush, and being very mindful and careful with the way it's playing out. She's not shoving too much at us too fast, and it gives you time to sort of put yourself in the character's place, and it makes the story relatable. As far as the art, Jamal Campbell to me is a superstar in the making. I think he's somebody whose profile is really going to become bigger, I guess I'll put it that way, this year, with his work on Naomi, which kind of had a lot of people talking about him as an artist they hadn't been familiar with before, even though he'd been doing other work. I think that really gave him a higher profile, and this Far Sector book is sort of continuing that trend. One thing that's interesting is when you look at this artwork, because Jamal colors his own stuff, when you look at the artwork here in Far Sector compared to the artwork, say, in Naomi, the colors are much more muted here, which I find interesting. Normally you would think, okay, Naomi, a book that is set on Earth in a small town, you wouldn't necessarily expect the most bright and vibrant colors. But the colors there are much more bright and vibrant than the colors here. You know, we're on this alien world, and it's much, it's a much more pastel look. So it does have a very different feel than the other work that I've seen Jamal do before. But his line work is still exquisite. Storytelling, panel layouts, things like that are great. It's just interesting the choices that he's making in terms of color work. I'd be really curious to talk to him to know why he's choosing the color work that he's going with. I would think almost he would flip those. But so again, I just think it's a really interesting story. But I think the Far Sector title is a book that's flying under a lot of people's radar. And I have a feeling that it's a book that could see a lot of value later on, just because there's not a lot of people picking it up. And when people get wind of it, it's going to be it could be tough to find. So do yourself a favor. If you haven't checked it out, pick up this issue. And if you like it, immediately go and seek out the first three issues, because, like I said, I think it's going to be tough to find at some point. All right. Speaking of great artwork, the best artwork of the week, my book of the week, is Detective Comics number 1020. It's from a writer, Peter J. Tomasi, pencils by Brad Walker, who is one of my favorite artists and is doing some of the best work of his career here, joined by his longtime inking partner, Andrew Hennessy, and Brad Anderson's on colors, with Rob Lee handling the letters. First of all, the Detective Comics book that Peter Tomasi, Brad Walker, and friends are putting out right now is like instant classic status Batman stuff. I talked to Brad and Peter about it when their run first started, and Brad confirmed for me that this is kind of the direction that they wanted to go and they planned on going. And it's not that they're trying to separate the Detective comic book from the rest of the DC universe, but in a way they are trying to do exactly that, because they want it to be like classic Batman stories that could fit into any era. And that's really what we've been getting with Detective. You don't feel like you need to be reading any other book. These are just stories that stand on their own. And again, it doesn't feel like it belongs in one particular era of Batman or another. Like, you read it and you say, oh, this really feels like this is the Scott Snyder Batman or the Tom King Batman. They're classic Batman stories with some of his most well-known villains, and they just, like I said, they just feel classic. That's the best word I can use to describe them. Like, they would fit in any time. And it's not to say they feel dated or they feel like they're pulling back and moving backwards and going to the past, and nothing like that. They're doing new stuff. They're doing interesting stuff. They're taking characters, in this case, Two-Face, which, if you've seen the cover that Brad Walker did, it's absolutely amazing. There's also a great Lee Bermejo variant cover. But, you know, here they're taking a classic Batman villain like Two-Face, who's been around forever, and they're doing something new with him. You know, just like I was talking about with Far Sector, it's what Peter and Brad have been doing all along. They're telling these stories that feel like they're timeless, they're evergreen Batman stories. They're not tied into any particular event or any particular time period. And even though they're using classic villains, they're doing some new things with them. So the art in this book is amazing. Two-Face has never looked more sort of deformed and hideous than he does in the hands of Brad Walker. Love the way Brad draws Batman. It's moody, it's dark, it's the action. We get some great scenes of not only Batman fighting, but we also get him investigating crime scenes and stuff. So it's the best thing. It's very much a book that showcases Batman being Batman, all aspects of him. You know, the thinking hero, the detective, as well as kind of the action superhero. So really brutal scenes from Brad with Two-Face and all his scars and blood, and just really great action-y Batman. So I had to pick it for my book of the week. There's just so many great scenes as I'm scrolling through here and checking it out. And the color work that Brad Anderson does is really great. It's kind of visceral and moody. And of course, the inks, as Andrew Hennessy frequently works with Brad Walker, he does a great job of adding texture and perfect line weights and shading and such to what Brad does. So just an incredible book. Really, really awesome issue of Detective Comics this week. All right, up next is the finale of Dial H for Hero. In fact, it's called Dial F for Finale. This is from writer Sam Humphries. We have Joe Quinones doing the interior art, and Jordan Gibson and Joe Quinones on colors, with Dave Sharp on letters. This has been a really fun title. It's another one of the Wonder Comics books from Brian Michael Bendis's imprint. And this was just a fun series. Sam Humphries gets it when it comes to Dial H. It has the right amount of seriousness and jokes and homages to the past of Dial H. And it's just fun. It's just a fun title. Some of the things that that Sam did were very much tongue-in-cheek, and we got introduced to a lot of new concepts for Dial H, but they made sense when you start talking about kind of some of the tropes of the DC universe, I guess you'd say. And the art by Joe Quinones has been spectacular. I don't know, other than maybe Patrick Gleason, that I've seen any comic artist in recent memory who's been able to ape so many different styles and show so many different styles. And as our heroes, our protagonists of the Dial H story have gone along, we've seen them transform into all kinds of different heroes, and Quinones has been just amazing in his line work and in his concept and character designs for these characters. It's been one of the most fun things to experience when reading this Dial H book, was just to see, okay, what styles Quinones going to use for this character in this week's book. Kudos to the whole creative team. It was a lot of fun, and I hope we haven't seen the last of Dial H. I hope we get more of it down the line with these characters. All right, up next we have Justice League Dark number 20. It's from writers Ram V and James Tynan, with art by Kyle Hotz and colors by FCO Placencia, with letters by Rob Lee. I'll talk about the art first. Kyle Hotz, his art, I was trying to figure out who it reminded me of as I was reading this issue, and I think it's a little Kelly Jones. That's who I think it is. Now, I'm not a particular fan of Kelly Jones' art. I'm not a particular fan of the art here. But I will say that Hotz doesn't go kind of over the edge of the cliff with crazy proportions and muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles the way that Kelly Jones does. But it definitely seems that he has a Kelly Jones influence. There are other aspects of his art where it seems he's much more traditional, and I did kind of appreciate those pages more. If somebody said, okay, you're going to read a comic and it's going to be drawn by Kelly Jones, or you can read that same comic and it's drawn by Kyle Hotz, I would pick Kyle Hotz in a second without even thinking about it twice. So his art is better in my mind than Kelly Jones, but there's just something about it and it's not the line work or the perspective or anything, but he uses an exaggerated style at times that I just don't care for. That's kind of evocative of the way that Kelly Jones will just completely throw out anatomy and perspective and any realism to the art for the sake of just making it look weird. And I guess in a way it works for the story that Tynan and Ram V are telling here, because it is Justice League Dark, and it is somewhat of a horror book in that way. But again, it's just not. I mean, the Alvaro Bueno Martinez art that has been on here previously, in my mind, is much better. And yeah, I do have to wonder. I will say this: we know that 5G is coming, or Generation 5, or whatever they end up calling the event which is probably going to change somewhat in aspect just with the departure of Dan DiDio. And we talked about it on the Spotlight episode last Friday. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, you can go and check that out. And we talk about it in detail and such. But I will say that a lot of the artists whose work that we had been seeing all of a sudden seemed to have disappeared off these books. And I just have a feeling they're probably some of the artists who are working on the new Generation 5 stuff or 5G stuff. Because they want to get ahead, so they have a little bit of a buffer. So because it's been worked on, I know it's not going to be completely abandoned. Again, we talked about it on the episode on Friday. But it just means that we have some of these artists who maybe aren't as polished or don't have as much experience working on some of these books. So I understand it's the nature of the business. Artists can't do every single book of every single run anymore. It's just not the way things work. But again, I just miss Alvaro's work on Justice League Dark. So that being said, I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep reading this book. I'm still enjoying it now, but I know Tynan is leaving because of his work on Batman. He was going to stay on Justice League Dark, if I recall. But that was when Batman was going to go to being a monthly book, but they decided to keep Batman at twice monthly. And it's just a little more than James can handle with his other commitments on creator-owned stuff and such. So it's too bad, because I love what he's been doing with these characters. It's great to see, Zatanna and Bobo and Animal Man, John Constantine, Man-Bat. I mean, they're fun characters. Dr. Fate. Not always the frontliners you would expect on a Justice League team, but still a lot of fun. And I know Tynan didn't want to have to leave, so I wish that he could have stayed and finished out what his plans were for the book. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes with Ram V taking over the helm. This particular issue starts an arc where Justice League Dark's trying to save the world from some chaos that's going on with the different parliaments, the Parliament of Rot, the Parliament of Trees, the Parliament of Red, kind of at war with each other. I've never been the biggest fan of the parliaments and that sort of aspect of the DCU, but Tynan makes it enjoyable. And again, I love the voices he gives these particular characters. So Justice League Dark continues to be an above average book in my mind. And even the art, even though, I'm comparing it to Kelly Jones, whose art I don't particularly like, I will say that Kyle Hoetz does a good job of storytelling from panel to panel. And it's definitely not the worst art I've seen, put it that way. And there are... there is one particular sequence where it goes almost black and white that's done really, really well. And I do like the art in there. Kyle Hoetz's art fits that sequence very well. So it's kind of like almost like a dream sequence. So for that reason, I think that it works pretty well. So. All right, well, let me move on and talk about the next book. It is Shazam number 11. And I have to say that this is one of those books where you understand why people have the love that they do for Geoff Johns, because I just love everything he's been doing with Shazam. This is part 11 of the story, so he's been telling the same story all along ever since he came on the Shazam book, and I really enjoy that. One thing I don't enjoy, this is one of those books where, when I say the art is not that great this week, it's one of the books that I have to point to. So written by Geoff Johns, the art is by Scott Collins, colors by Michael Atea, and letters by Rob Lee. It was Dale Eaglesham on art in the Shazam book when it launched. He couldn't keep up, or the scripts were not coming in fast enough for him to be ahead. Again, not sure. I think we have to lay the blame at the feet of Geoff Johns. Same thing with the Doomsday Clock series. again, it's just not Jeff's priority these days when he's working on movie and TV stuff. There's only so many hours in the day. You got to think, you know, both the books being late, what's the common factor here? Well, it's Jeff Johns. And I know Dale Eaglesham's not the fastest either. And it's because his art is so super detailed. And that's fine. They brought Marco Santucci on to help out, whose art is also well-suited for the Shazam book. So I didn't mind at all. But now they've got Scott Collins on there. And I was trying to think if I've ever seen Scott Collins draw anything but The Flash. And I couldn't come up with anything. I'm sure he has. I'm sure I've read other stuff that he's done. And I don't know if they thought, well, let's put Collins on Shazam because Flash has lightning and Shazam, you know, lightning, and it'll just work. It doesn't work. Not for me anyway. These are supposed to be kids, and they don't look like kids when Scott Collins draws them. And I don't know. It just doesn't work for me. I thought that the characters weren't really recognizable, especially the wizard. Dr. Savannah looked weird to me, so not the best art. And but it's one of those situations where, again, I love what Johns has been doing with the story, with the different magical lands, with the Shazam family. And so I'm still in, and it's not terrible art. I just feel like Dale Eaglesham or Marco Santucci are just better suited. Scott Collins' art just... You know, his lines tend to be a little thicker, a little chunkier, and I just don't feel that it suits these characters who are supposed to be kids. That being said, Michael Atea has been the colorist all along. His color work is fantastic. He does such a great job of making the lightning feel like it's lightning, light sources and glowing and all that kind of thing. So at least we have that consistency. So when it shows up in trade, even though the line work and the rendering and such is going to be pretty different when you get to these Collins issues, you have that throughput, that consistency of the color work to sort of tie it all together. But yeah, I'm really loving it, and I'm not going to spoil because I want you to go out and pick it up for yourself. But the character that shows up at the end of this issue has me so excited to see Johns working with this character again, that I can't wait for the next issue. Really, really excited for issue 12 of Shazam, and wonder what it might bode for the future of the DCU. So if you don't buy Shazam, you have no plans on buying Shazam, when you're at your local comic shop, at least pick up this issue and flip to the last page. And just look at what happens. Just look at the last three panels and tell me that doesn't make you want to buy it and read it. Yeah, really, really good stuff. All right, next up we have Suicide Squad number 3, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo, colors by Adriano Lucas, and letters by Wes Abbott. I'm actually going to talk about the colors first. Adriano Lucas is my... colorist of the year for 2019. Did an incredible job, and that color work continues here. Really, really great colors on this story. And this is another one of those books where it's an exception to what I was saying about great story but bad art. Redondo's art's great. He does an exceptional job. Love his designs on these new characters. If you haven't been following Suicide Squad, we pretty much have a whole new team here. We have Harley Quinn and Deadshot, and Captain Boomerang apparently is part of the team still as well. But everybody else is brand new. And not only that, we have new people, powers that be behind Suicide Squad, or Task Force X, and they are not all they appear to be, is the premise that we're getting. So... this was a sort of a turning point in the first three issues here, where we sort of start to understand there's a lot more to the characters in the story than meets the eye, and it's just getting really, really good. I think it's great, just like the Far Sector book or what Tomasi and Walker have been bringing to the detective book that's new. Tom Taylor's bringing something new to the DCU and to Suicide Squad specifically with his ideas. And I think this is one that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about. I think it's flying under the radar a little bit. And if you're a fan of Suicide Squad, I think you will dig what's going on here, because it's one thing that has kind of bothered me about Suicide Squad over the last couple of years. It started to feel very redundant, and like they were telling the same kind of story over and over. You know, it's Amanda Waller, and she's, you know, not a likable character, and she's, you know, just annoying. And it's Harley being Harley, and Captain Boomerang making snide remarks, and Deadshot kind of brooding, and that's it, right? And that's a Suicide Squad comic. So the fact that Tom Taylor's bringing in some new ideas here and livening things up, it made for so far it's made for a really enjoyable series, and this is the best issue yet. Really, really good. A lot of questions raised, some questions answered, and really, really great artwork. And I can't wait to learn more about the characters and learn more about what Tom Taylor has planned. I'll also say this, you know, in much of the recent Suicide Squad comics, it was kind of that core group of characters. But even the other team members were kind of named villains, so you never really worried about somebody not making it. We've got so many new characters here from Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo. You never know who's safe. At any time, anybody could go. And it does kind of raise the stakes and you know, kind of like The Walking Dead, right? Where at any time somebody could get killed off. I mean, obviously they're not going to kill off Harley, probably not going to kill off Deadshot. But anybody else, they're new characters. They could go at any time. So it kind of leads some gravity and some consequences to the story, which I enjoy as well. All right, up next, Leviathan Dawn number one. This spins out of Brian Michael Bendis's Leviathan Rising story from recent Action Comics and Superman books, as well as the Leviathan miniseries, Event Leviathan. So this issue is written by Brian Michael Bendis. We have art by Alex Maleev and letters by Joshua Reed. So, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record here, but not a fan of what Bendis has been doing with Superman. Not a fan of his Event Leviathan stuff. Not a big fan of Alex Maleev's artwork either. Just don't care for the way it looks. His line work is not terrible, but I just don't care for the art style. You know, the storytelling is fine. Transitions from panel to panel and such are fine, but the colors are typically muted, dark. The artwork's a little muddy. It just never does anything for me. It doesn't evoke any emotion in my mind. It doesn't feel like superhero comics. To me, his artwork is much more suited for kind of crime noir. And I know that's where Brian Michael Bendis got his start, was writing crime comics. And I don't know if he feels like he still is writing crime comics in his own mind. It doesn't really feel like that to me, because do have these characters. I mean, it's like he's trying to tell this spy story, some sort of hybrid of Jessica Jones and you know, superheroes with a little bit of crime noir thrown in, and it just doesn't click for me. Like the sum of the parts is not greater than the whole. You know, it just, I'm not that interested. I don't want to spoil for those that haven't finished Event Leviathan. But I didn't like who the character of Leviathan turns out to be. I feel like it's great when a writer comes in, or even an established writer at DC reaches back in DC history and you know, brings a character back from the past to make them interesting. But when you do that and then you turn them evil or whatever, it just, to me, it just invalidates so much of what came before. And I know those stories still exist, but it just doesn't make sense. Like, why would that person have behaved this way for, you know, X number of years and been a hero and been noble and whatever, and then because you want them to, they turn completely evil and they're just doing something that just seems so out of character. It just didn't work for me when I found out who Event Leviathan was. That being said, if I throw out that aspect of it, if I throw out the art and I just try to enjoy it for the story that's being told, this is probably the Leviathan story or Leviathan issue that I have enjoyed the most, just because Bendis brings in a little bit of levity, which he's usually pretty good at doing with dialogue sometimes. And he does do a good job of that here as well, particularly with the character of Mr. Bones and Green Arrow and Steve Trevor. They all have some pretty good lines in here that were humorous enough and kept me interested. So I think this is just a one-shot, and it's going to be followed up by a Leviathan Checkmate. So we're sort of getting a new version of Checkmate here. And so as much as I didn't really enjoy the Event Leviathan miniseries, I'm probably going to pick up Event Leviathan Checkmate because I am interested enough to see how it all unfolds. And when I say pick up, I mean I'm going to get the preview copy. I'm going to read it. I'm probably not going to actually buy the book. So I'd say, you know, to borrow a rating from another long-running comic book podcast, Comic Geek Speak, they used to do an off-the-rack thing where they'd say, should you buy it, should you borrow it, or should you pants it? Pants being you just skip it completely. I'd say you borrow it. This is one you borrow. It's worth reading. I don't know that it's worth your $4 or $5. All right, up next we have Wonder Woman number 752. It's written by Steve Orlando, art by Max Rayner, colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr., and letters by Pat Brusseau. I like what Steve Orlando's been doing with Wonder Woman lately. She feels, the title itself feels more super heroic than it has in a really, really long time. It's not to say that I didn't love the epic feel of what Greg Rucka did when Wonder Woman Rebirth relaunched with Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott on art. Obviously, I love that stuff. Both those artists are incredible. Rucka is a super talented writer, and I loved what he added to the mythos of Wonder Woman. But when you don't want to talk about just telling Wonder Woman stories where she just feels like a superhero, that's what Orlando's been doing. So we get introduced to a new character in this issue. We've got some other recent characters that showed up in the Wonder Woman Annual 3 that are in this issue as well, and it definitely feels like things are building to a head. So it's one of those books I would say before, when we were 100% sure that 5G was happening and we kind of had an idea of exactly what 5G was going to be, this is one of the books that was flying under the radar that I feel like people should have been reading to sort of get an idea of the timing of 5G. Now that what 5G may be is sort of up in the air, I'm not as confident that this is a book that you should be reading in terms of wanting to know what 5G is about. But I will say it's a book you should be reading because it's really spectacular. It's just a really good, solid superhero book, and I attribute a lot of that. I give the credit for that to Steve Orlando, who I think is a very underrated writer. As far as the art in the book, good art. Max Rayner, not intimately familiar with his work, but it's solid. Not spectacular, you know, this isn't like super detailed, best art I've ever seen, but I do like the way he renders Wonder Woman. He keeps her proportions realistic. And he handles the action scenes very well. Plus, I like the way he handles backgrounds and layouts as well. So, good art, good solid Wonder Woman story, and I'm very curious to see what Steve Orlando is building up to. All right, last book that I'm going to talk about in detail. It's Hell Arisen 3, Year of the Villain, Hell Arisen 3, from James Tynan writing, Steve Epting and Javier Fernandez as the artist, Nick Falardo on colors, and Travis Lanham on letters. Art's pretty solid. You got a couple of good artists in Epting and Fernandez. But what I'll say is that their art styles are different enough that you do notice the difference in art when one versus one artist doing a page versus the other. Not enough to completely pull you out of the story, but I wish that they could have just gone with either one of the artists or the other. Colors are great by Filardi, very well suited for this sort of almost scary horror kind of feel that I think they're going for with this Hell Arisen story. Very much ties into what the recent Deceased story that Tom Taylor did with the heroes being infected by the Batman Who Laughs Last, and also tying in with what Scott Snyder was doing in Justice League. So earlier, like I was talking about, those three big stories that have all been going on, focusing on the villains, whether it be Legion of Doom from Justice League, Leviathan from the Superman books, or the Batman Who Laughs from the Batman books. This is another one of those big stories, big events that you should be reading if you kind of want to have your pulse on what's going on with the DC Universe. Plus, the other reason this is going to be a really hot book is Punchline, Joker's new girlfriend / sidekick or whatever she's called, shows up here. I guess she made her first appearance last week in Batman 89 in like one panel. Here she's fully appears, I guess. You could almost think of that one as a cameo. This one she's much more involved or present, I guess you'd say. That being said, she's a minor character at best in this issue, but I don't know. I mean, when it comes to first appearances and such, the market or fans sort of decide on their own when they want to, what a first appearance is and what book gets hot or not. So I have a feeling a lot of people are going to pick up this book, though, because Punchline is in it. You know, this is one of her early appearances. And I hope that people don't just buy it and not read it. Just buy it because Punchline's in it and not read it, because it's a good story. Tynan's a great writer. You know, he's my writer of the year for 2019 and well-deserved. Or I'm sorry, 2018. Gave the award in 2019. And this is a story that's fun. It's, as I said, building on a lot of what Scott Snyder and Tynan himself did in the Justice League story. And it's fun. This is where you want to go if you want the continuation of the story of the Justice League versus the Legion of Doom. So I think it's an important book in terms of what's going on with DC and how all that Apex Lex and the Year of the Villain, basically, which is what 2020 has been, or 2019 was for DC, and continuing in 2020, this is part of that. It's part of that needing to be wrapped up before we move on to 5G, whatever that turns out to be. So do recommend it. Like I said, the artwork's a little inconsistent, but one of my favorite issues this week in terms of story. And again, I know it's going to be a hot seller because of the Punchline stuff, but it's also worth reading, so I'll just mention that. All right, so those are the books that I had a chance to read and wanted to talk about. Let me give a rundown of some of the other books you might be interested in. We have Dark Ark After the Flood, number 3, from Aftershock Comics, written by Cullen Bunn. From Boom, we've got Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 48, and I think I've heard rumors that that is coming to an end with 50, but I'm sure it won't be off stands for long because the Power Rangers book has been real popular for Boom. Speaking of popular books, we have a lot of reprintings for Once and Future from Kieran Gillen and Dan Mora. We have an 8th printing for the first issue. We have a 4th printing for the second issue, a 3rd printing for the 3rd issue, and a 2nd printing for the 4th issue. So if you missed any of those, if you've heard what a great story it is, hopefully you can get a chance to pick up one of these 2nd or 3rd, 4th, 8th printings, what have you, from Boom. Over at Dark Horse, there's a couple number ones I want to mention. We have a Hidden Society number one with art by Raphael Albuquerque, and then there's also a Tomorrow number one, which is looks to be a sci-fi story from Dark Horse. I mentioned most of the DC books rather already. I will also mention Batgirl number 44 comes out today as you listen to this. Batman Beyond, which has been a really hot book lately, is up to number 41. There's a Crisis on Infinite Earths Giant number 2. There's also a facsimile edition of Flash number 123, which is a very important book in terms of DC lore and DC history. It's the first time the Barry Allen Flash met the Jay Garrick Flash, the Flash of Two Worlds, one of the first stories that started to establish the multiverse for DC, whether you feel that's good or bad, I guess can be debated. But if you want a chance to own that relatively cheaply, as the original obviously goes for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, you can pick up the facsimile edition for $4. All right, over at Image, Death and Glory from Rick Remender, number 9 is out tomorrow. We also have Ice Cream Man number 18, which continues to sell really well and be a good title for Image. I've heard a lot of good things. I just never really got into it. I know Manny reads it. I don't know. It seemed pretty out there when I flipped through it, so I never really got into it. Also, Sex Criminals is up to number 27, and that one's winding down. I'm not sure what issue is going to be the last one, but I know they're quickly approaching the final issue of that. Over at Marvel, we have 2020 Force Works number 1, which is a 3-issue limited series. Amazing Spider-Man is up to number 40. Jason Aaron's Avengers run is up to number 31. That's coming out tomorrow. We also have a Falcon and Winter Soldier number 1 of 5. Obviously, Marvel thinking about the Disney Plus series, Falcon and Winter Soldier, and trying to take advantage of people anticipating that. We've got a Fantastic Four Grim Noir story series starting with a number 1. Seems like it's going to be sort of a private eye crime noir story with the Thing, Ben Grimm. That's where the Grimm comes from. And I kind of thought about picking it up, but ultimately decided against it just for monetary reasons. So, but it looks interesting. If you're a fan of The Thing, you probably want to give that a chance. Ghost Rider is up to number 5. We have a Giant Size X-Men, Jean Grey, and Emma Frost book that's coming out. Also over in the X-Men corner of the universe, we've got X-Men number 7 and X-Men Fantastic Four number 2. And last book I'll mention is from Valiant, Quantum and Woody number 2 of 5. I haven't even read Quantum and Woody number 1 of this new limited series, but something I'm probably going to check out at some point. So those are some of the other books that are coming out tomorrow that you might want to be on the lookout for. As always, thanks everybody for listening. Hit me up in the comments on Twitter or Instagram and let me know what you're reading and what you thought about any of the books that I talked about. Especially curious what people think of You're the Villain, Hell Arisen number 3 and Shazam. Like I said, those last three panels, reach out and let me know what you think of the character that's showing up there. I'd love to hear some fan theories if anybody's as excited to see the return of that character as I am. So as always, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.